to The Last Thing I Saw. This is a Locarno Film Festival series. It's about midway through the festival. A lot of anticipated things have screened, but there's still a couple to come. I'm here with Beatrice Loaiza, who is here for more or less the duration. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'm leaving on Thursday, and I've been here since Wednesday.
And this is also, I think you said, your first time here?
It is. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Any general impressions of the festival?
Well, I was always told that it was disgustingly hot, but it's actually been like pretty nice weather, so I'm very grateful for that one as someone that very easily melts in the sun.
I told a lot of people that I hadn't been here for 3 years, but I'm happily proved wrong this year. It's been pleasant.
Yeah, and I'd also say that the films have been better than expected, at least the ones I've chosen, so I'm very pleasantly surprised.
That's good. It's a lovely place to be, but I did have 1 year where I wasn't seeing a lot of good stuff, and then I'm just kind of, not the case this year. Let's start with one of the ones that you liked from a well-known director, but I'm on and off on this guy. Denis Coté has a new film that premiered here.
It's Mademoiselle Canopsia.
Canopsia, okay.
Which I don't think is a French word. It's
Canopsia sounds almost Greek.
It's like some, I should have looked this up, but it's another meaning.
Yeah. So what did you make of it?
So far, I think it's my favorite. I mean, I also liked The Raw Du Judo, which I think you talked about with Jessica.
We did.
But I am also kind of on and off about Denis Coté. I didn't see the last one, but Social Hygiene, I was kind of like whatever about.
Yeah.
But this one is, it's essentially like a haunted house movie. It's about a woman that is, I guess, the caretaker of some giant building, and it's sort of ambiguous what the function of the building even is. Like, there's a part that's sort of like a cathedral, there's some parts that kind of have, I don't know, like an industrial warehouse quality. Some rooms seem like they used to be classrooms, and I guess maybe it's some sort of like old church structure, but it's just like she goes into so many different rooms, there's so many just sort of formalist static creepy shots of parts of the building where you don't really get a sense of how big it is, but you know it's really, really big. But it's this solitary woman that's, I guess, just living there and overseeing it. And it's one of those films, I was talking about this film in relation to the Chantal Ackerman, like Hotel Monterey.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's just like, loneliness.
Yeah.
The sort of charged energy of solitary spaces. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those films that's kind of like a thriller without really having any thrills. It's just the sense of ambient unease and creepiness from just looking at, these sort of vacuous spaces kind of creates a certain tension despite the fact that not much really happens.
Okay.
And when something does happen, it's extremely creepy. There are a few sort of extended monologues, never dialogue. They're always like monologues kind of delivered just by one person to another person, but you don't really have like an exchange, which I guess heightens the sense of solitariness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was like very pulled into it and I was telling you earlier that I have been rewatching a lot of Chantal Ackerman movies. So having that sort of approach fresh on the brain and going into this, which is definitely from that school, but it kind of becomes something a bit stranger towards the end, was a nice experience.
Wow. I will definitely watch that. I, for some reason, had not heard a lot. It was almost a surprise to me that he had a film here.
Same. I remember someone talked about it on Twitter because I found it difficult to find it in the actual program.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
And I couldn't really even find it.
Is it like an out of competition section?
It's out of competition. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also like a Barbet Schroeder film about a painter. That's also, I haven't heard very much at all about that one. So Mademoiselle Canopsia, we were just puzzling over what that means. It sounds like some term having to do with eyes. I don't know. Thinking of autopsy and, I don't know, stuff like that. Does that mean like no sight?
We could like probably look this up, but unfortunately we are in like Wi-Fi-less, like rough data territory here. Apparently there's some sort of like rock in the Locarno Mountains that like makes internet connection in general just kind of strange.
Really?
Yeah, someone was telling me this last night, like a Locarno staffer.
Wow.
Which is why, I mean, it's inconsistent, but yes, it's like hard.
I didn't know that.
We're not like in the middle of nowhere, like we're
anyway, we're in
embedded in civilization. Yeah.
We're in the thriving city of Locarno.
But the internet has been rough.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know there was like there's plutonium or something.
Maybe this is just a myth, but
that's what the staffers tell people. Oh, there's a mineral in the mountains. All right, well that's the Denis Côté film, and then another one that you've just freshly seen, I think, is Camping du Lac.
Yes. So I think this is a first-time filmmaker, Eleanor Santagnan, probably butchering her last name, but she's French and the film takes place or was like funded by Belgian money. Okay. But it is essentially, so the director herself is sort of the actress. Her car breaks down and she has to have it like fixed in this sort of more rural camping lake area. Mm-hmm. But since everything is slower in those parts, she has to wait several days for it to actually be fixed. And so they kind of put her up in this trailer camping ground where there is just dozens of sort of eccentric locals that she observes very lovingly in sort of first person voiceover narration that's kind of like Romarian. And, you know, the 3 or 4 days that she was originally waiting for her car kind of extends to a week and months. And she kind of falls in love with the place, and it turns out that that's how a lot of people kind of ended up being pulled into this community. And yeah, I mean, it's essentially her going into little tangents about each person, and there's sort of like a mythic quality to it too. Like the opening story is she attends a mass and they talk about the local saint who is like, you know, some saint of fish.
Okay.
And where, you know, his origin story of how he achieved sainthood was he has this magical connection with fish that he was able to like reproduce and like feed royals that like came, you know, along his path. And like, so that sort of fish symbol kind of extends to present day, that present day town. There's like a sort of Loch Ness monster character that's at the center of the film that apparently is in this lake, and like all the locals kind of perpetuate that myth.
Huh.
So anyways, it's a very kind of rambling, pastoral, gentle story, but it ultimately becomes something just very sad and poignant about like the passage of time and the ability to preserve these sorts of special communities so like out of the way and so unlike, you know, modernity, in a way that I found just really touching. I was very surprised by it because I didn't know what to expect out of like a first feature competition. I think this was my first within that section. So.
Okay.
Or maybe not. We'll see.
That's great. Yeah, I was curious about that one, Camping du Lac. Well, moving right along, since we're kind of like in a, what is it, the speed round, because you're about to go to another screening coming up. And Camping du Lac, I think you literally just
yeah, we literally met up in like this sliver of time between these two screenings.
Because they have like this one base where you're just going from one press screening to the next, which otherwise doubles as a very small
casino.
which weirdly is also in Cannes. The building is right adjacent to a casino. So,
oh yeah,
some sort of gambling cinema connection.
It's just entertainment, spectacle.
That's right, you know? Society of the spectacle. Well, let's talk about one that I think we both saw, which is Yannick, the latest Quentin Dupieux movie, clocking in at only 65 minutes.
Is it like shorter than his? I mean, his films are usually pretty short, but I feel like this one was particularly.
I think this is really short. I mean, the setup is very, as usual, like he somehow finds like a catchy narrative gadget to kind of start things off with. And in this case, we're watching like a frankly terrible play that's called The Cuckold and has one of those terrible theater posters that you will see
if you ever go to Paris. Yeah. There's so many terrible like comedies for the stage that are just like, what is this? Like the 90s?
Yeah. And they do a little parody of one of those posters. So it's a play where a husband, where we join it just at the moment where the husband has learned that his wife is cuckolding him and with a guy who is currently in the bathroom having some sort of intestinal distress, which is all the more somehow pathetic. But I mean, another name for this movie could be like The Heckler, basically, because what happens is Yannick is the name of the guy who stands up in the middle of the performance and says like, you know, I took a night off for this. It's really hard for me and I'm not enjoying myself. And it just escalates because he ends up demanding that they basically, I mean, it's like a Twitter thing come alive or something, yeah. You know, where that they basically be funny. You know, I think that's like the Homer Simpson thing where he's like listening to, you know, Prairie Home Companion or something. It's like grabbing the radio and saying, be funny. And, you know, I thought it was funny. He's always kind of, I won't say hit or miss, but his rhythms from one movie to the next are very different. Like how dense he wants to make mm-hmm. one of his movies in terms of whatever joke to minute ratio. Sometimes like one difference would be between like smoking causes coughing, mm-hmm. which is sort of a, I don't know, thinner, thinner landscape versus incredible, but true is, mm-hmm. which is denser, but I was happy with it. I think it rests on the shoulders of the guy playing Yannick, who's really good at this like slow witted character. But what did you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, I also generally like his work, even the sort of more, the funner stuff. And I mean, they're all kind of fun, but obviously some are kind of meatier, more sort of conceptually thought out, and some are mm-hmm. just, I don't want to use, well, yeah, a little trashier, but like on purpose. They're like playing with the conceit of like trash in popular comedy, popular
kind of
movies.
Sketchy.
Yeah.
They're literally skit-like.
You're right. Yep. But yeah, I mean, but this one also is very contained because it's essentially mm-hmm. like a one-act play. I mean, it's
yeah.
literally a play, but then it's only unfolds within the actual mm-hmm. theater
right.
where all of this is happening. And then, and yeah, and he like kind of takes everyone hostage because he's like, you're yeah. going to make this a better play and a lot funnier because whatever you guys were doing is absolute trash. But yeah, I mean, I definitely enjoyed it and I found it like unexpectedly meaty and sort of, I think, going through ideas that he's been kind of mildly fleshing out for a while, just kind mm-hmm. of this idea of like who gets to decide what's art
mm-hmm.
And whether, you know, film artists or just artists in general should be so pretentious and have these lofty ideals about mm-hmm. like who they're artists for and like how it should be respected versus just like the bottom line of needing to entertain mm-hmm. the audience and what those demands should look like. But yeah, no, I mean, he fleshes that out here in a way that's really funny and kind of unexpected how the power dynamics kind of flip around because mm-hmm. Yannick is obviously ostensibly the bad guy at first because he's, you know, rudely interrupting these actors who are trying to seriously put forth this play. But then, you know, the actors end up and one specific guy ends up kind of
yes.
becoming the bad guy and in a way that's like actually super convincing. So yeah, no, I quite liked it. I like, you know, the way he's churning them out.
Yeah. Oh no, I love it. I mean, I feel it's like he's like gone back in time to people doing like four reelers or, you know, in the 20s.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
He
yeah.
just has the he has this great idea and then kind of crystallizes something around it. So yeah. I mean, it's also something that kind of rests on a couple of twists that I don't want to give away.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, captive audience, a literal captive audience. Maybe one more. The Vanishing Soldier, Israeli movie by Danny Rosenberg. This is, yeah, a soldier basically goes AWOL. What did you think of this one?
I just generally like enjoyed it and thought it was a fun time. It's
yeah.
clearly in the tradition of the like sort of Safdie brothers, Dardenne's, just like a day, like there's 24 hours in this soldier going AWOL and
yeah.
I guess trying to convince himself that he can relive just his normal life because he's very young. He's like 18 or
yeah,
he's super like young
kid.
He's a kid essentially. Yeah. And he like visits his girlfriend and he like visits his grandma and his parents. And then very quickly you realize the news has already gotten hold of the idea that he's run away, or I think they like say that he's been kidnapped.
Yeah, that's
and
yeah.
then he quickly realizes like, I actually can't pull this off. And now I have to find a way to get myself back there and not get in trouble, which obviously he would get in huge trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. He gets himself in this huge mess that there's like no easy way to extract himself from. And I feel like in a way he kind of goes a little crazy, basically. He almost is like tuning in and out of the reality of his situation, you know? At one point he just like daydreams with his dog. Remember that scene where he's
oh,
like,
oh, yeah.
It's just this kind of escapism. So on the personal level, that's what's happening. But yeah, on the larger level, the IDF is, you know, mobilizing, killing people basically because of this. So there's like a larger political way that this is not, I mean, not quite an allegory, but just like illustrating how things spin out of control. Like a situation where because someone is missing could lead to further attacks.
Right.
It's not a great situation.
Yeah, yeah. And I generally liked how it presented how he's so desperately trying to just go back to normal life, mm-hmm. but like the way that, you know, very quickly the reality of the war and, you know, the various politics swirling around it sort of bleed into just like banal things, like through the radio and the TV, and like he's at this bar and people just start talking about it and he like literally can't escape it. And, you know, they never like make literal the, you know, politics of the moment. It's just kind of sneaking in a way that I thought was pretty smart.
No, I think it's good. It also just shows, it emphasizes how he's, like, you're complicit, basically. So his kind of ignorance about everything that's going to happen is also a problem. So, but it doesn't have to come out and state that.
Yeah. Fun film. It was
fun
like...
film. Yeah. It's a film at a run. Well, we can wrap up there so we can move on
perfect.
To the next
wow,
screening.
We really 3 minutes away from my next screening, but it's like, it's right across the road, essentially.
Yeah. But I'm glad we could fit this in.
Yeah. Same.
You've been listening to The Last Thing I Saw with your host, Nicholas Rapold. Please consider signing up at rapold.substack.com. Special thanks to the Minarets for the opening music from their song, Montserrat. Thank you for listening.